south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
All right, this is show number 700 and still plugging away. By the way, for those of you who get this show from Podbean, I've been notified that I've got over 1 million downloads now. Good to know. 1 million plus from that site and a lot more from other sites too. I know. 1 million ain't what it used to be, right? Not to mention when a potty-trained parrot can get 6 million views on YouTube. Oh, and here's something funny, if not slightly amazing. You know, I did that show last week on container homes and how they can be adapted down here in Latin America so easily and cheaply. And then, after I did that show, a day later, I find out that Amazon.com, is now selling a completely assembled container home for $36,000. Yep. For those of you watching this on YouTube, you'll see that Amazon container home right now. I know. I get emails from people all the time saying, Johnny, you're way behind on the YouTube shows. All I can say is, hey, you know, I'm working on it, and I hope to have it completely up to date by the first of the year. Now, about this complete container home you can buy on Amazon for $36,000, well, it turns out it's all set up for northern climates, insulated, ready to be occupied, air conditioning and a heating plant, whatever that is, included. In fact, it says here in the promotional literature, in an effort to recycle thousands of surplus containers that sit on docks around the world, a fleet of new companies are now using the 20 and 40-foot containers to create prefab tiny homes all available to order on Amazon and delivered to your location. Now, the delivery charge for one of these 9,000-pound, 40-foot container homes is $4,500 anywhere in the continental U.S. So, $36,000 plus $4,500, about $40,000. Then, all you have to do once it's delivered is to hook up your plumbing, electrical, and have yourself connected to city sewer, and if you're out in the boonies, a holding or septic tank system. So, for the utility hookups, maybe another $5,000 plus the land. Here's what this company says about their prefab container homes. Wisconsin-based MOD International is selling a 320-square-foot house, complete and ready for utility hookups, with a brand new container as the structure's shell, not a recycled one, and includes a rather plain bedroom, shower, toilet, sink, small kitchenette, appliances, and living area, with large double doors to the outside and strategically placed insulated windows. All right, my take? Yeah, looking at this thing, it is bare bones and minimum. And it's made out of only one big container. That gives you, they say, about 320 square foot of living space. And man, that's tight. So how does that relate to having a container home here in Latin America? Well, because the labor costs are so cheap here in Latin America, and you don't need insulation, and you don't need air conditioning or heating either. That is if you're in the Altiplano. However, if you're in low altitudes or on the beach, you will opt for insulation and air conditioning. Even so, for that $40,000 Amazon wants for this thing, you should be able to put together a really nice container home setup with more like 3 containers or 1,000 square feet instead of 320, which is really minimum. Plus, for that price, $40,000, you can make it modern and stylish, not like a Lego on steroids. Anyway, just thought I'd pass that on to you for the sake of completeness. So then is it worth it to order one of these things from Amazon and have it shipped down? Well, I'd say no, because you'd have to pay another $2,000 or more to have it shipped. Then, depending on the country, you'll get hit with a 10 to 20% import tax. There's another maybe $5,000. Bottom line, if you did the whole thing down here by yourself and with a contractor, you could have 2, 3, even 4 times the house. Hey, now's a good time to talk about ordering things from eBay, Amazon, Alibaba, etc. Well, here's a story on that, and I can tell you firsthand because I order stuff from Amazon and eBay all the time. Here's how it works. If you're in Mexico or Central America, that includes all your Latin countries down through Panama, you just hook up online with one of the many local shipping and air freight companies that have an office in Miami or someplace in Florida. So if you're in Guatemala, Nicaragua, Honduras, Salvador, Costa Rica, Mexico, or Panama, not so much in Belize, by the way, things are expensive there simply because they have a very small population and not much competition at all. But in Mexico and the other Central American countries, there are dozens of freight forwarding companies with an office near the international airport in their particular Latin country, and they have an office somewhere in Florida. And when you order anything from Amazon, eBay, wherever in the States, even Alibaba, and I've done that too, that means the stuff's coming directly from China. I know, everything comes from China these days, but Alibaba is actually the Chinese equivalent of Amazon. So in a nutshell, when you're down here in Latin America, here's how you go about ordering stuff on the internet. You know, when you place an order, there's always a shipping address and a billing address, right? So ahead of time, before you ever place your very first order, your Latin American freight forwarding company will give you their address in Miami or Fort Lauderdale, whatever. So you'll use your name. It doesn't have to be the name that's on the credit card, or you'll use your company name or your lawyer's name, depending on how anonymous you want to be. But typically, you'll put down your own name plus the address of the freight forwarding company in Florida as if it was your own address. And here's the trick. The forwarding company will give you a little code you put after your first name. Like if it's Johnny Mueller, there might be a 4, 5, or 6-digit code like AX327. And that's how the freight forwarding company will sort it out and make sure it gets to you when it's finally shipped to your Latin destination. So then you might ask, what happens if Amazon or Alibaba does not put that number down for some reason? Because it's kind of odd. You know, people don't normally have letters or numbers after their names, right? Unless, of course, they're royalty or have a funky kind of name like John Galt III. Well, I'll tell you, that's happened to me. I've ordered stuff and the company forgot or omitted the number code after my name. That happened more than once with Alibaba. Let's face it, anyone you have to deal with there is working at a Chinese call center, and their English is never perfect. It's good enough, but once in a while they will screw up with things like that. But here's the thing, there's certainly only one Johnny Mueller using that particular freight forwarding service coming out of Miami to Central America, so no problem there. And I can always locate my packages. Plus, these days everything's got a tracking number, so you can always find out where it's located. The problem is, and why some people do need those codes after their names, seems to be with people of Spanish heritage, Latin names. Because, you know, if you look in a Latin phone book, yep, they still have the antique paper versions down here, though they are kind of phasing them out. You'll see, for example, 3 or 4 pages of guys named Jose Martinez. And that's not all. Phone books are just filled with hundreds and hundreds of repeated common names, which means your particular Latin freight forwarding service could have any number of clients named, for example, Carlos Castillo. Now, you've heard me say that most Latins have 4 names, first name, middle name, last name, and mother's maiden name. Well, you know, Latins have found out that there's almost never enough space when ordering online to get all those names in, so they'll just use their first 2 names. So long story short, that's why there's a code after your name. So the system is in place, it works easy enough, and you almost never lose anything. And even if you do, Amazon, eBay, and the others will be good for it. However, do note I'm talking about Central America and Mexico now. South America is a completely different story. The fact is, if you live in South America, that would be everything south of Panama. Unfortunately, I'm getting all kinds of reports from gringos and expats saying that they too can order things from Amazon, eBay, and Alibaba, etc. Except you must be prepared for the fact that it can take weeks, months, and sometimes orders will never arrive at all. In fact, it's kind of in the same boat that Central America was in 5 or 6 years ago. In fact, a couple of Latino guys I know in both Argentina and Brazil who are into software business, they say overseas ordering from the likes of Amazon and e-commerce in general is a terrible problem. And though all the online ordering services are in place and well established, the shipping times and reliability are all dependent on those lard asses in government. Meanwhile, the firms that do the actual shipping are very efficient. So in Mexico and Central America, they've got the system down, with the customs and the aduana not nearly so heavy-handed. The stuff will arrive at your Miami or Florida freight forwarder's address in a day or two, just as if you were ordering it and having it shipped to your home in Minnesota. Then, as far as your freight forwarding service shipping it to your Latin country in Central America, that almost never takes more than an additional week. So, you can pretty much count on the fact that the moment you order something from, let's say, Amazon, 90% of the time you'll get it within 10 days to 2 weeks. But the real outstanding improvement these days is that there are tracking numbers on everything and you almost never lose anything, not like before. And even lately, in the last few weeks with those big hurricanes hitting Florida, that slowed things down and added maybe another week, but no one seems to have lost anything. Not that I've heard about anyway. So you can figure maybe only 1 in 10 packages will take more than 2 weeks to get to you. Oh, and like I said, all these freight forwarding services coming out of Florida have an office in Florida and at the major international airport in your Latin country. Another cool thing is that they'll always shoot you an email when a package has arrived, and in the email they'll tell you what the weight is and your shipping charges, and they'll also ask you if you'd like to come and pick it up or have it delivered. And since these outfits always have a fleet of guys with motorcycles, they'll drop it off within a day of that notification. Oh, and get this, if they can fit it on the motorcycle, no matter how big and bulky it is, they'll only charge you between $3 and $5 to have it delivered anywhere within your Latin country. Which is very helpful, especially since a lot of gringos and expats don't live close to their country's international airport. And I'll tell you, in the old days, 3 to 5 years ago, when these services were first starting up, the only way you could pick up your package was to go to their office and sign for it yourself. A big pain in the butt if you didn't live close to their office near the airport. So just to repeat, if you're big on ordering things online, it's a pretty inexpensive and streamlined process if you're living in Mexico or Central America. But as for South America, it is being done, though a lot more expensive, and expect long delays, so you'll have to be patient. It's going to take them a couple of years to get up to speed. Oh, and one more thing regarding shipping things down. In the old days, some 5 years or so ago, oftentimes people would use the U.S. mail to ship small items to people in Latin America. Of course, letters in tiny parcels would get through with no problem, but anything boxed up that was larger than a cell phone would inevitably get stuck in that slimy bureaucracy at customs, the aduana. And believe me, back then, going down to the custom office was a real nightmare. Not to mention, unless, for example, you were in Panama or Costa Rica, no one in the custom office speaks anything but Spanish. Remember, we're talking about low-end, lazy-ass government grants here. So just a few short years ago, it was a nightmare to have stuff sent down here. Thank God those days are gone. So it took those companies like Amazon and eBay to open up the floodgates. That's why it's recommended to use one of those freight forwarding services with an office in Miami. That way, you'll never have to deal with customs, the aduana, or the government at all. They do all that for you. So it's infinitely easier to have things shipped in than it ever was. Except, again, if you're going to be a gringo or expat in South America. But things are changing there, too, so hopefully in a year or so, most of those countries will be up to speed. And just a little tip here, if you're going to send snail mail to someone up in the States from here in Latin America, yeah, right, like anyone does that anymore, huh? Anyway, if nostalgia does creep in and you have that old-school urge, you know, damn the torpedoes and scribble away without the benefit of a spell check. If you send it through your mail forwarding service, it'll cost you probably $2. And what they'll do is they'll drop it in the U.S. mail when it gets to Miami. So it will get to your party up in the States or Canada by U.S. mail. Now, for packages and letters coming the other way from people in the States to you here in Latin America, it's wise to tell your friends, family, bank, creditors, whatever, to send it to your mail forwarding service in Florida via the U.S. mail. However, and this is important, tell them it's not a good idea to use the U.S. mail to send things directly to your residence or wherever you are in Latin America. Though letters and envelopes might get through that way eventually. Most packages of any size will get stuck in the aduana, that's the government customs services. Then you're dealing with the lard asses in the bureaucracy again. So by all means, use one of those freight forwarding services. However, if you're a clueless gringo and don't speak Spanish, and thus aren't able to evaluate the different companies out there, and you might be paying twice what you really have to. For example, there are some forwarding services that might charge $3 a pound shipped from Miami to your Central American country, and other services that'll charge $6 to $8 a pound to provide the exact same service. Oh, and I've been asked this question about shipping. What happens if you've discovered a really nice niche business, and you have to have some heavy or bulky items shipped in from the States? If you're stuck paying $3 to $8 a pound to bring it in, that could kill the whole concept. However, be aware if you're bringing in heavy or bulky stuff from the States, there are companies that will pack a container with yours and other people's items, wait till it's full, and send it down to Latin America. It's a much cheaper alternative. You'll have to add a week or two onto the transit time, but it'll get there. But normally, who cares, especially if you're shipping down bulky items like solar panels, batteries, tires, motors, generators, hardware, whatever. These companies charge by the cubic foot, not by the pound. And in many cases, the aduana and custom charges are included in that cubic foot rate. How about this for a quite odd but relevant example? Suppose you were setting up an off-the-grid solar system here in Latin America, and you were going to buy one of those Tesla Powerwall units. Now, those things weigh around 300 or 400 pounds. By the way, a Tesla Powerwall is a lithium battery pack, an inverter, and all the necessary electronics to go off the grid. So they're 300 or 400 pounds, but they only take up 4 or 5 cubic feet of space. Now get this, if you were going to have one of those things shipped down through a regular freight forwarding service that charged, let's say, only $3 a pound, because let's say you're used to using that service and you didn't know there were other ways to ship that kind of stuff. Even at 400 pounds, you'd be paying $1,200 to get it from Miami to, let's say, Salvador, Guatemala, Honduras, whatever. Now, this is the part you only learn by having boots on the ground down here a while. If you were to ship one of those Tesla Powerwalls by the shipping container method where they throw it on a boat and it takes up 5 cubic feet of space, well, looking at one particular service, they charge $14 a cubic foot to get it from Miami to pretty much anywhere in Central America for a grand total of, get this, $70. Whereas if you used a freight forwarding service that you generally use for Amazon and eBay, etc., that'd be $1,200, almost 20 times more than having it shipped by boat. So I guess you can see by now, if you're a clueless gringo and don't speak Spanish and can't check those things out, you could make a very costly mistake. A lot of gringos do, you know. Which is why I spend some time going over that very stuff at my Expat Insider Seminar. The next one, of course, is in January 2018. You can see the sign-up details and check out the early bird discounts by going to www.thenewexpat.com. Just click on the seminar link. It's on the main page. Now, if you can't make it to my next seminar or swing getting boots on the ground yourself, the very next best thing is to take my 9-hour Expat Essentials course. You want to know how to get all your ducks lined up for that Plan B? Check out the Expat Essentials course. Just go to expatplanb.com. And don't forget, if you're putting the pieces together for your own Plan B, download my expat phone consultation questionnaire. Guaranteed, it'll give you a lot of good ideas. When speaking of phone consultations, if you're coming to my Expat Insider Seminar, you're automatically hooked up with a one-on-one phone consult with me. By the way, have you ever been south of the border off the gringo tourist trail? Well, you'll get your chance if you come to my Expat Insider Seminar. You won't regret it. All right, switching gears, but not too much. You know, here on the Expat Files, we always talk about having what you might call Plan B insurance that'll keep you safe once that big reset button is pushed up in the States. And that starts out with picking a Latin American country, getting your temporary or permanent residency, and then in 5 years or so, proceed to get your citizenship, nationality, and passport. So eventually getting dual citizenship is quite important to that Plan B. Meaning you're a citizen of a first world country like the US or Canada, and you've got a second citizenship to fall back on when the reset button gets pushed, or worse. That means no matter how hard Big Brother clamps down on US or Canadian citizens, even to the extent of making it very difficult to travel outside the borders because they really don't want the sheep to leave the barn, that's becoming more and more apparent. Especially since now you have to pay an escalating exit tax if you decide on renouncing your U.S. citizenship. Now, I'm not suggesting you renounce. That's always a last resort, and you shouldn't even be thinking about it unless you've got a nationality and passport from another country. That way, if Big Brother restrictions get too harsh or severe, and they will, you could just flip Uncle Sam the hook and be on your merry way to your other second nationality country. Now, of course, the traditional way to get a second nationality or citizenship is to first pick your country, preferably a Latin American country, go for temporary, then permanent residency. Sometimes you can skip the temporary residency part and go straight to permanent residency. There are a lot of ways to do that, and our Latin legal eagle discusses all that at my Expat Insider Seminar. Then, as mentioned, you have to wait, on average, around 5 years before you can apply for your passport nationality, and then you're in. You're a permanent, unrevocable citizen of another country. And you know, a lot of people have expressed concerns that the U.S. will not let you have second nationality. That's absolutely not true. Americans are allowed to have dual, even multiple citizenships. It's completely legal. And if you doubt it, you don't want to believe me, just ask any Latino you know in your local neighborhood that happens to be a U.S. citizen. You'll find that in almost all cases, he's also a legal citizen of a Latin American country, too. He's a dual citizen. Well, how'd that happen? Why? That's because the U.S. allows it. It's completely legal. In fact, if you're a U.S. citizen, you could have as many other nationalities as you want or that you qualify for. But again, you cannot renounce your U.S. citizenship for whatever reason unless you're a citizen of another country. They just won't let you do it. Otherwise, you'd be, you see, a stateless person. You'd be like that guy Tom Hanks portrays in that movie where he has to live in the airport because no country will accept him. He's stateless, no passport. So anyway, these days, the cheapest way to get a second nationality and passport is to start with the residency process and wait it out 5 years or so till you get that final passport. However, that's not the easiest way to do it. The easiest way is to just buy yourself citizenship with cash money from a country that actually sells them, or they call it, by the more politically correct term, the economic investment path to citizenship. Sounds better, right? Because, you know, when you say I'm going to buy a new nationality and citizenship, that sounds illegal, doesn't it? Well, in many countries, it isn't. High rollers do it all the time. So if you have enough dough, you can bypass the residency crap and get your passport in a couple months. Again, certain countries have made provisions for that because it brings in a lot of extra dough into the treasury. Oh, and by the way, if you're a foreigner coming into the United States with more than $500,000 to invest, you can also buy your U.S. passport that way, too. Yes, it's an unpublicized way that many foreign investors, these days a lot of them come from China, can pretty much get instant citizenship and bypass the 10-year green card policy. By the way, I think I read somewhere that's how that malignant pusbag George Soros got his U.S. passport. I know, somehow it doesn't seem right, huh? Yeah, well, these days every modern-day corrupt country has two sets of rules. One for the wealthy and politically connected, and the rest for the working stiffs like you and I. Now, I mentioned in a past show there are some small island countries that offer those so-called economic investment citizenship programs. And traditionally, a person would have to come up with $100,000 and often a lot more. However, just this week, something very interesting and cool has put these economic citizenship programs in the news again. Let me read you some excerpts from an article that explains the whole thing. It starts out, "Did you know the government of the island of Vanuatu in the Pacific has just announced they will be accepting Bitcoin in exchange for citizenship?" By the way, the population of Vanuatu is around 300,000. It's kind of an ecological paradise, but doesn't have much of anything else. In fact, it's forever getting nailed by hurricanes and natural disasters. The United Nations reports that Vanuatu has the highest natural disaster risk of all the countries it's ever measured. So it's a tiny country that gets hit regularly by hurricanes, earthquakes, and tsunamis. So definitely, it's not a place you'd actually want to live, but to have a passport from there, well, that's a completely different story. And to do that, you could either move there and spend 5 years with permanent residency and get that passport. Not very plausible or even comfortable. Or if you have enough dough, you could outright buy your citizenship. And Vanuatu has now done something that no one's done before. They're taking Bitcoin, which is a very, very smart move. Not only does it put them on the map, they're getting hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of free publicity out of it. And here's what else that article says. It repeats again that Vanuatu is one of the several nations that offers citizenship to foreigners in exchange for making a so-called investment in the country. It talks about how Malta, Cyprus, St. Kitts, Nevis, and Dominica offer similar programs, but not yet with Bitcoin. Then it repeats what I just mentioned before. It says dozens of other countries, including the U.S., offer unpublicized residency by investment programs where foreigners receive legal residency and passports in exchange for a large investment. In other words, a number of first world and third world governments are what you might call passport scalpers. You know, you pay the big bucks and you get the front row seats and the backstage passes to the Kanye concert. Oh, please. While everyone else has to wait in line for 12 hours to get the bleacher seats. For example, it says here, Malta's individual investor program requires foreigners to donate, yeah, right, 650,000 euros to the government. And that's only one of the qualifications. In Cyprus, it's more than 2 million euros, but you get that passport. Now, Vanuatu, who just started accepting Bitcoin, has had an economic citizenship program for a long time, and always much cheaper than other instant nationality programs. Though you'll still end up paying over $200,000 between all the additional fees and assessments. And then there's Dominica, another small island in the Caribbean. It's got probably the best value for an instant passport with the so-called donation of 100 grand along with some other fees. And get this, the island of St. Kitts in the Caribbean is offering a bit of a special right now through March 2018, providing passport and citizenship in exchange for $150,000 donation to their very recent hurricane relief fund. That's a big discount over their normal $250,000 price. Or you can invest in their sugar industry diversification fund approved by their government. But it's the little Pacific island chain of Vanuatu that's getting all this instant publicity, being that it's the first country in the world to accept Bitcoin in exchange for passport and citizenship. And you know, it looks like someone in that island government is very smart because they know there are a ton of brand new Bitcoin millionaires out there who bought a lot of Bitcoins years ago. They're sitting on some very big gains. In other words, way too many Bitcoins and not much to spend them on. That means that someone at the top in Vanuatu's government is thinking about those Bitcoin millionaires as early adopters with the mindset that traditional government and banking systems are on the way out. In other words, a perfect self-selecting sample for a second passport. And it's true, early Bitcoin adopters were almost to a person, anti-tax, anti-government, freedom-loving political anarchists. And of course, big finance, big brother, and big banking are deathly afraid of Bitcoin and the cryptocurrencies. Now, of course, we'll have to see how this is going to play out, but I have a feeling there's going to be a hell of a lot of Vanuatu passports issued. Now, you know, one of the problems with Bitcoin is that if you turn it into U.S. fiat currency cash, you have to do it through a U.S. bank. And as soon as it's converted, you're looking at a big capital gains tax. What is it now, 28%? However, if you buy Vanuatu citizenship directly with Bitcoin, you're not going through a U.S. bank, are you? Though this article does warn that Vanuatu is a prime candidate for Bitcoin hackers because it's a tiny little country, and even some of the bigger countries, so-called monetary specialists, don't understand the blockchain and the security aspects involved. So will Vanuatu's government Bitcoin wallet get hacked? Maybe. Now, the good news is that this should spur other governments to start accepting Bitcoin too. They might not like it, but they'll have to. That is, once they've nailed down some solid cryptocurrency security measures. Which begs the question, which Latin American government will be the first one to accept Bitcoin?
South of the border.
This is the Expat Files, living in Latin America. If you want me to help you out with your own Plan B, just schedule a one-on-one consult. Send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to learn how to move forward with your own Plan B from right up there in the States, go to www.expatplanb.com and check out my three videos. See ya. Nos vemos.